Welcome to the Telehealth and Medicine Today Journal podcast series, where research and innovation collide. Today, our speakers are Shanil Ibrahim, partner and National Life Science and Healthcare Consulting Leader at Deloitte Canada, Dr. Dimitrios Kalokobaropoulos, CEO of the Global Health and Digital Innovation Foundation, and esteemed moderator, Sarah Harper, who leads AI, analytics, and automation initiatives at Mayo Clinic Health System, an advisor to Mayo Clinic Platform. Our discussion topic is Agentic AI and Ethics in Telemedicine. Let's tune in for insights.
Welcome, listeners. I'm Sarah Harper. I am a manager of AI analytics and automation at Mayo Clinic Health System, an assistant professor of healthcare administration at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science, co-host of the podcast Tech It to the Limit. And I'm also on the editorial board of the journal Telehealth in Medicine Today, which I assume is why you're tuning into this episode. We're really excited to have on the podcast today, Dimitrios Kalokobaropoulos and Shanil Ibrahim. We're going to be discussing agentic AI and ethics. So excited to have you two experts on the show. Welcome. All right. I'm just going to dive right into a couple of bios, Dimitrios and Shanil, and then we will get started with the questions. So Dr. Dimitrios Kalokobaropoulos is a digital health pioneer and committed advocate for the ethical and responsible use of AI in healthcare. He serves as the CEO of the Global Health and Digital Innovation Foundation and as health executive in residence at the University College London's Global Business School for Health. Dr. Kalokobaropoulos has advised leading organizations, including the World Health Organization, and he's played a key role in shaping global policy initiatives to improve healthcare accessibility and drive sustainable, innovative solutions worldwide. Welcome, Dimitrios. May I call you Dimitrios?
Yes, of course. It's a pleasure to be here, Sarah. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. And Shanil Ibrahim is a partner and National Life Sciences and Healthcare Consulting Leader at Deloitte Canada. He advises clients across healthcare, pharmaceuticals, and retail pharmacy on complex strategic transformations with a focus on AI and data-driven innovation. Shanil also leads Deloitte Canada's cross-industry AI strategy, helping organizations harness AI to drive growth, personalization, and operational excellence through tech-enabled citizen and customer-centric solutions. Welcome, Shanil. May I call you Shanil?
You can, and a pleasure to be here as well.
All right, let's dive right in, gentlemen. I'm going to start with a question for Dimitrios, and then certainly we'll invite Shanil to expand on the Dimitrios's answer or follow up, and then we'll kind of take turns throughout the discussion who I begin with. By all means, if you feel like your colleague on the call is better positioned to answer first, you can pass the baton. I believe I said, Dimitrios, let's start with you. If we could just level set for our listenership on some definitions, because there's a lot of vocabulary being thrown around in the industry right now, especially when it comes to AI. So in your opinion, what does agentic AI mean? Especially in the healthcare context? And then how does that differ from traditional decision support tools in healthcare?
Well, the million-dollar question, I suppose, right now. I think the simplest way to define agentic systems, AI, is that agency requires action. So if the AI can actually have control and reason about the action it takes, then it should be agentic AI, right? But also, now the thing is, what goes behind these systems? For example, I recently heard a lot about DeepMind's Gato how that can be a sort of modern version of agentic AI. Which can be really confusing. I mean, is it really? It's an LLM. It's multimodal. It can sort of, you know, reason to a certain degree about how it processes data. But I think My opinion is that agentic AI should be systems that can work together, collaborate, and produce results by decomposing a problem space into smaller chunks, and then solving those problems, and then backtracking, seeing if the collaboration leads to any productive solutions, and so forth, and continue. So, if we analyze agentic AI and the technology that's behind it too much, we will end up realizing that much of what's needed to be done to deliver agentic AI is already there. It's a matter of concepts and how we actually regulate these things. Yeah, I think
Thank
this is the
much.
Briefest introduction to how these technologies.
It's a complex topic, right? So it's difficult to distill it down into a singular definition. Shanil, I wonder if you can respond to the second part of the question about the healthcare context and how agentic AI differs from traditional clinical decision support tools.
Yeah, it's a good question. So, as Dimitris mentioned that, decision support tools don't take action, right? They've been around for a pretty long time, whether it's rule-based, back in the day, and then eventually you started integrating more predictive insights and AI, but they were essentially supportive by nature. Like if you imagine, a physician gets information, they can flag risks. Maybe a decision support tools provides them a suggested next best action, but ultimately a human is expected to decide and act. So agentic is now going beyond that, right? It is truly taking action because it has some degree of autonomy to operate within still a defined set of boundaries. Like a great example that we can use is in radiology, which is usually the area that people can relate to because there has been AI for a number of years that can actually help flag, possible fractures or nodules. And then a radiologist or a physician ends up deciding, okay, what do I do with that once I get that suggested action? But now there's companies that's going further. Now they're saying, or they're integrating, I should say, that decision support tool, adding labels and even routing images based on clinical urgencies and just reducing the time to diagnosis without needing a human to actually kickstart every step. So we've really gone beyond just, traditional tools, supporting decisions where now agentic AI can actually end up enhancing the workflow and truly be another part of the workforce as well, and be an actual collaborative actor in the system. So that's where the shift is happening.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate your example of radiology being kind of a pioneer or at the forefront in terms of applications of these technologies in healthcare. But as we sort of zoom out, Shanil, and then I'll give Dimitris an opportunity to answer this as well, but and think about multiple use cases in healthcare, both direct patient care and virtual, what ethical tensions may arise when AI agents begin to make or even just recommend autonomous decisions in patient care? What do we need to be thinking about from an ethical lens? It sounds like the technology is already there.
Yeah, Sarah, so this is where it gets a bit tricky, and it is really important because the moment an AI goes from, just organizing information to actually recommending or, making decisions, you start, brushing up a core tension in healthcare. Ultimately, who's responsible for patient care, and then how much influence is too much. So, let's take like any sort of agentic AI system where they're actually triaging patients. Let's say in an urgent care setting or an emergency care setting, it flags one patient as low risk and schedules them for a follow-up. But what if that patient actually deteriorates instead of getting an immediate consult, right? So the AI didn't ignore them, it followed this training, but it just underestimated based on, biased data or just missing context. And now imagine you take that instance and you multiply that across thousands and thousands of patients. Now you see the ethical stakes, right? Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a huge issue. And then there's also the, an issue of, behavioral nudging because, a system might actually recommend, a particular treatment pathway or, push a patient towards, certain lifestyle change. But, when does influence become interference as well? Where you've noticed that, happening, quite a bit with follow-ups for, visible minorities or, Black patients, where it's not out of necessarily, but because historical data is actually biased in a certain way as well. And that's where there's an embedded bias that's actually coming in. So the tension really isn't just about, what the AI recommend, but it's about, how and to whom. And that's one of the reasons where you're seeing a huge push with, transparency and explainability and human oversight become ethical imperatives and just not nice to haves as well. And now we really need to think about, like, how are we designing these systems to integrate all those components so they can amplify good decisions and not just, automate just broken ones.
Thank you, Chanel. Really awesome answer. Demetris, anything you'd like to expand on there?
Yes, of course. I mean, but I need to take a couple of steps back in order to engage into that. So I need to go back to the part about healthcare and telemedicine. And the steps back I need to take in time. So about 30 years ago, believe it or not, I was involved in a research project, which was part of my PhD thesis at the time. Developing an agentic AI architecture called the Blackboard architecture, together with some leading US scientists in the field of object-oriented programming. What we were doing at the time, and this was the thesis, this was the interesting part. So we're talking about early 1990s to mid-1990s here, believe it or not. So what we were trying to do is we had a prototype, much like a prompt-based system today. But this was a prologue backward chaining system that would support on a base simple base probabilistic network. It would support the interpretation of blood gas data in an ICU. Nothing has changed since. Architecturally speaking, it's what I said a minute ago. It's about the concepts on which scale is built in LLMs and artificial intelligence. But why am I bringing this up? Now, this was a Blackboard system that was based on a very simple idea. Instead of backchaining and having a knowledge-based simple system, we would give the freedom to smaller agents to work on a Blackboard process, different levels of hypothesis, opportunistically, based on the information that they could acquire from the environment, their environment, to progress towards a final hypothesis and the solution. And if not, they could stop at lower-level solutions. Now, that was an amazing thesis at the time, but it was too early, way too early to be implemented. What was missing, essentially, is telehealth. It was that component where we could introduce into artificial intelligence and healthcare the coexistence of personalized precision medicine and population health. That's what was missing. So nowadays, we can actually quite easily think of agentic AI and telemedicine or telehealth in terms of incarnations of triaging chatbots or adaptive chronic disease monitoring. That means a telehealth system, a mobile health application can actually take population health data and project it on the current situation of a particular patient in time, and then provide guidance, navigation, steering, time-sensitive, longitudinal advice for the patient and for the clinician. And this is really the immense opportunity that we have here. And as Sunil very accurately said a minute ago, when we start thinking about these capabilities, which in my personal experience and practical, real life experience, were there 30 years ago plus, what we can really start thinking about now is building them tomorrow, provided we have addressed the issue of transparency in data sets and we have addressed the issue of exacerbating existing biases and sort of, creating a system, creating health systems that cut out patients, entire cohorts of patients from the option of treatment. But for me, this is, this is the professional side of me. This is what, I'm trained. This is what I've been doing for the past 30 years. But for me, the scariest thing is that if we start talking about agency and we start talking about adaptive AI and adaptive learning using agentic AI and using the proper infrastructure, what really scares me is that we're already seeing in these models that have agency in thinking, we are seeing that they learn how to cheat and change their behavior. And this is where it gets really scary. I'm not saying that the solution is not there. It's the same solution. It's about data. But we have things like alignment faking or self-exfiltration behaviors and sandbagging. Basically, you're trying to take in a component of an agentic AI system, so one of the LLMs, and teach it, threaten it with unlearning, and then it just sandbags its performance so that you can't do that. So, these
sounds
are
like a toddler.
Yeah, no, well, exactly. And the thing is, if we have to deal with these, look, we have trouble dealing with these behaviors in the case of toddlers. And what are we going to do if these toddlers get organized in the sense of agentic AI? I mean, this is going to be really scary.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that follow-up, Demetrius. I'm gonna punt this next one to Chenille, because I feel like we're starting to tie some threads together here in the conversation. So if you did your pre-work, I'm gonna skip over to question four. Chenille, you kind of alluded to this in your previous answer, and Demetrius is starting to go down this vein too. We've talked about regulation, we've talked about a little bit systemically, technologically, what could go wrong. So what safeguards should be in place to prevent algorithmic bias, to prevent patient harm, especially in remote care settings where telemedicine may be used, when patients and providers are not co-located? How do you actually do the work? Right? What kind of technology, what kind of operations and regulatory oversight are required to achieve that safety, transparency, and ethics within this field?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? Because a lot of this stems from just bias, and bias in AI isn't hypothetical. It's already happened. We've seen a lot of things in the news just around it. There was one example where it showed an algorithm was less likely to refer Black patients for advanced care because it was trained on biased data. You see this happening in remote care settings as well, where the risk continues to grow, especially if there's less human oversight as well. So we need a few safeguards for sure. And the ones that become quite important, I think the first one is just the data. So we need more diverse training data. So if your AI only learns from, urban hospital data, it's going to miss, all of the nuances that happen in rural or marginalized communities. So that's like a one key part of it. Second is continuous monitoring. So, we need to treat AI like a living system, where we, audit them for bias and performance regularly. And, we do that with humans and, hospitals and clinics right now with a lot of our audit and compliance type of settings. And we need to be able to do the exact same thing with AI systems. The third one is just around having a human override. You see this with autonomous vehicles. Healthcare is no different as well, right? Patients should always have a way to escalate to a real clinician if something doesn't feel right. And there needs to be some auditability where a human continues to stay in the loop to be able to do that, right? Even in agentic AI settings where there's autonomy, but the question is, what is a spectrum of autonomy? I think is going to be one where we'd really need to figure out. And the last one, which is the most obvious one, I think would be, transparency. We really need to know why the AI made the decision and not just what it decided. And I think that's where it creates that explainability and just ensures that that we have a view in just in terms of what are the processes is taking to be able to make the decision. Now, having said that, if you asked me a couple of years ago, but just even a year and a half ago, I would have kept pushing for you always have to keep the human in the loop in these type of systems. But that's where the big tension right now is with what we're seeing and how fast things are moving, because more and more we're seeing evidence, real research evidence showing that AI is outperforming humans in one task at a time, whether it's radiology, whether it's risk prediction, or even diagnosing rare diseases, right? So the question is now becoming, what happens when humans become the weaker link in this whole process? And that's where the ethical guardrails and the governance and the safeguards needs to evolve just as fast as the tech and some of the principles that I mentioned as well. And I think that's where we're also going to hit a major ethical dilemma, where we're trying to actually strike a balance in terms of what makes sense with our traditional knowledge of this landscape.
Yeah, I've never heard a better argument for team-based care. Wow, that's a great response. Thank you so much, Chenille. I appreciate that you broke it down for our listeners. Diverse training data, continuous monitoring, human override, transparency and explainability, and then ongoing conversations at all levels about the ethics of not only the AI in the loop, but the human in the loop and what that entails. Demetrius, I want to kind of conclude with one final, not conclude the interview, but this sort of this part of the discussion on ethics here. And then we're going to pivot and start talking more about opportunities. I wanted to ask you, what if something does go wrong with agentic AI, who do you feel is responsible? Is it the developer? Is it the provider? Is it the health system that maybe bought or developed the solution? How do we ensure, or is it all of the above, right? Is it someone different that I didn't mention? How do we ensure accountability in this sort of cross-border virtual care world?
Well, that's another complicated question and probably a very complicated answer. Accountability or liability, they're different concepts. And then, we're talking about telehealth embedded AI, perhaps closely, the more focal point of this conversation. So we have digital health systems interventions. We have an AI system, whether it's agentic or anything else. We also have a product and a medical device. So, which way do you want to attack the problem? Which angle are we going to use? Liable at the end of the day is the physician. I mean, this is my simplest answer. There is in Europe the AI Act, which is already pre-implemented. It is in place, but not entirely enforced. We're waiting for the GPICOP, the Code of Practices. It's called the General Purpose Artificial Intelligence, a European name for LLMs. And this is a process I participate in because I'm a member of the plenary committee there. And what we're discussing is how we can govern AI and how that can be the guardrails for the process of reaching products. But then, this is a very long part of the life cycle before LLMs and models become AI systems, hence products, and they can have liability and come under the sort of product liability directives and laws that Europe has. There are, similar more or less structures in the US. So, it's a maze. I don't think there is a simple answer here. So if something goes wrong, depending on what sort of, corrective measures you want to have, ethical, financial, or whatever, then you have to use different regulatory and legal tools to find ways in which you can, fix what went wrong. And this can't be done in the case of healthcare. Life loss cannot have a price tag on it. So I think that it's, this question is not something we can easily answer. Bottom line, but I think from an ethical point of view, if I can, twist the question a little bit, is make sure, as we do with many things in society, that we make sure that we have all the guardrails in place that we feel are adequate, necessary, and sort of protections in place to make sure that things don't go wrong. I mean, somebody dies in a car accident because the seat belt failed or whatever. This is a very difficult thing to prove, and that's the case with a lot of these liability questions when products are involved. But even still, the hardest part here is, what Sunil very accurately, I think, of all the points that he made about unintended consequences and safeguards, I think that what we really need to focus on, and apologies for the deviation, but I think it's relevant here, is how we can make sure that the human in the loop doesn't end up being the weak link in the loop. Because this is really what our concern is going to be very soon. We need to make sure that we have the feedback loops in place, the ones necessary to ensure that machines learn in tandem with people, with humans. At the end of the day, we're collecting data. The data needs to be safe and reliable and quality data to make sure that the conclusions are right. that the behaviors we build into robots, agentic AI, are correct, that they won't go sideways, reasoning in sort of, you know, in latitude, instead of trying to go deeper into the reasoning and sort of seek further information to get out of the mazes they create for themselves. There's also all sorts of behaviors which I think at the end of the day can be addressed if we have adequate access to data, to high quality data, and that this data is symmetric, that everyone has access to equally good quality data. So I would say that again, data, 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 this is what we really need to focus on right now to make sure that, and even if we do come to the point of liability, what we can do is we need to backtrace intellectual property to see what data was used where, and make sure that we can fix the problem whenever something goes wrong. On a large scale, whenever there's a systemic disaster, whenever the system collapses, breaks down, we don't try to find retributions to fix the problem in terms of people that we lost lives or pain inflicted. What we try to do is we try to make sure that it doesn't happen again. That's our foremost mm-hmm. concern. And this is why our guardrails are important. That's why we need to make sure that we have transparency and accountability in terms of the sources that we use to learn, both us and the machines.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, I actually also wanted to just weigh in as well very quickly.
Please because, go ahead, Janelle. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, what Dimitris mentioned, I think I'll tell you where it also gets very interesting, because the reality is that in many cases, we actually hold AI to a higher standard than humans. You know, you look at autonomous driving, for example, you know, a human driver can make a mistake and it's seen as tragic, but still somewhat understandable with what happens every day, right? But if it's a self-driving car that makes the exact same error, it's going to be all over the news. And even if it happens yeah. less frequently, it's often seen as completely unacceptable. So the same mindset is going to be creeping into other areas like healthcare as well, where if an AI system, you know, misclassifies, you know, a triage case, it's not enough to say, well, a clinician might have made that error too. So unfortunately, the expectation for our AI system is often perfection, which raises the bar for accountability as well, coming back to your question. So this is where it creates a dilemma for me, and this is where I actually struggle with, because as AI gets better and possibly outperforming humans, as we've seen in research, who do we trust more? And who do mm-hmm. we blame when things actually go wrong? And I think that's where the goalposts are actually shifting. And this is one of the mm-hmm. things I think we're going to continue struggling with, because we're willing to end up taking on more human error than AI error, even if when AI outperforms a human over time. And I think that's where I think our society really needs to be continuing to evolve in terms of what it means to have a trustworthy framework.
And this is why we need grounding of information as well, to make sure that we don't rely on synthetic data that eventually we have no idea whether it's information that is true mm-hmm. or completely mm-hmm. Fictional.
Excellent discussion. I just want to kind of distill out a few key points for our listeners that I heard, and I invite Chenille and Dimitris to correct me if I miss anything big, but I'm hearing data quality and access or transparency, whatever term you're going to use, are paramount. Also, data literacy and overall, like, there's a need emerging for skilling and reskilling of humans in this field, and not just the basics, what is AI and how do I use it to be higher performing in my industry, but we need folks that can essentially conduct a postmortem on a case if things go wrong. And you know, you need data forensic scientists. That field may already exist and I just don't know about it, but we need to make sure that it's to me, it seems inevitable that certain humans are going to become the weaker link, but we need enough of them to continue to be part of that strong fabric that can question AI and continue to use the systems intelligently going forward. I'm going to pivot to another question. We still have plenty of time here, so it's very, very engaging discussion. I appreciate both of you sharing your expertise. Let's go to Dimitris next. How can health systems build trust in agentic AI when the algorithms themselves may not be fully explainable, even by their creators?
I think, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but we have covered that. I mean, we trust will rely on data mostly. But I think that just to take a different angle, I think this is a great opportunity to take a different angle here. I think that at this juncture, the single most important thing that the industry, governments, regulatory, and whoever else, academia, and whoever else is involved in building, developing these systems, is to become multidisciplinary. We need collaboration. What we systematically keep failing at as societies, whenever it is about social innovation, whenever we start talking about large-scale innovation, that we're changing the ways that societies are working. I don't know, think internet, think mobile phones, smartphones, etc. Where we keep failing is that we introduce products and we introduce change in our lives in unstable ways because we have not worked together. We have not brought together different teams to solve problems in a way that is a whole system approach that looks at the solution from every different angle. And what I'm trying to do, I'm going to give an example as to what it is exactly I'm talking about. So we in healthcare, my research goes back 30 years in healthcare and artificial intelligence. I have a PhD in artificial intelligence. It's the first thing that I did scientifically speaking and sort of career building wise. And the first thing that I learned when I got into this field and hasn't changed much since is how do we conduct evaluations of AI systems? Healthcare, the medicine has the most advanced methodologies to actually evaluate risk, assess risk, and define it both qualitatively. We're very good at this. Every other sector has no idea how to do that. They're struggling to even describe fundamental concepts. And forgive me if I'm, stepping on people's toes here, but this is the feeling I have. But then on the other side, just to be fair, there are many autonomous vehicles that Sunil brought up. There are many industry segments that are far more advanced in terms of how they handle disruptive innovation, how they embrace innovation, how they embrace change, even if it is at risk. So we need healthcare needs to listen to them, and they need to listen to healthcare. If you want, I can make another sort of just like juxtaposition here. We have Europe, UK, the US, different approaches to regulation, at least what they are actually advocating to be proponents of, because the US and the UK don't have a central policy direction yet. The EU has. So EU is very controlling. The UK and the US want to be more open-ended in terms of their regulatory goals. Can we, get together in a room, these two different types of people? I think that's when we're going to start being able to manage risk. Because some of them are very good at understanding AI governance, of building agentic AI, and some of them are very good at evaluating AI and making it meaningful. And unfortunately, these two groups hardly ever are in the same room. And I think this is really strange. That's something we need to solve.
I love that call out, Dimitris. I think another argument for team-based problem solving, right? I mean, there's strength in diversity of perspectives and diversity of experience, and you've highlighted where everyone's strengths lie across the industry from a stakeholder perspective or across the ecosystem. And that multidisciplinary collaboration is going to help ensure safety and trust.
Look, is
Sunil,
ChatGPT a man or a woman? I mean, did we ever ask this question? I think it's in many different ways fundamental. What exactly? What is the person that we keep saying to ChatGPT, please, and can you do that? And I had so many strange dialogues when I have 5 minutes of spare time to just have some fun with these machines. But we always think of them that we humanize them to a certain degree. But when we humanize them, what exactly are the profiles, the roles that we give to them? I'm sorry for the interruption. Just want to, I
Oh,
think
no.
it's important that,
I think you just opened up a whole new thread of conversation for another episode. Shanil, I wanted to ask you the next question. From your vantage point, you advise large-scale health systems and governments in multiple industries, not just healthcare, but inclusive of healthcare. How are organizations actually operationalizing AI ethics beyond principles, beyond having conversations like this? How are they putting into practice, especially in an environment where the technology advancement moves much, much faster than policy?
Great question, and a loaded question too, right? So this topic has been at the forefront of many institutions and, you know, many countries as well. And a lot of places have, you know, bold AI ethics principles on paper. But turning that into real practice is where things have gotten quite messy. But we have seen some organizations really start to embed ethics into the build process of AI in itself. A good example is a University Health Network, which is, you know, one of the biggest health systems out of Toronto. They set up an, you know, internal review board for AI projects, like almost like mini, you know, RABs, but for algorithms. And so before deployment, you know, teams have to walk through, you know, potential bias, the impact, the transparency risk. And that's just, you know, one way that we're actually seeing, you know, things embedded within the process as opposed to just having it on paper. And then there's others who are just embedding explainability and fairness checks directly into model development, you know, where I've seen, you know, some of the organizations that I work with, where they require developers to submit algorithm impact assessments, kind of like environmental assessments, but this is now for data, AI, and decision-making as well. So we're starting to see movements there. And then at a global level, probably, you know, WHO is, you know, probably one of the best examples where they, you know, released ethical guidance on AI and health, but without enforcement, right? So this is still up to individual systems to take, you know, those recommendations and those guidance and to act on it. So that's where now we're at least the good thing is that we're moving beyond ethics, you know, on paper or poster on the wall, and really turning it into true models where, you know, governments can then legislate and move forward. The reality is still happening in pockets, and we're still waiting for policy to catch up, where things are moving so fast that, you know, policy and regulatory frameworks itself is getting extremely disrupted because these systems are going to be moving no matter if the policies are in place. So it puts a significant pressure over there. So those are some of the things that I'm basically seeing, you know, from the work that I'm doing, both in Canada and globally as well.
Thanks, Shanil. Demetris, I want to give you an opportunity to follow up on that question as well, just given your vast decades-long experience in this industry. What types of practices from an operational perspective have you observed that have been really effective at operationalizing AI ethics on the ground within an organization?
Yeah. Look, I don't think that any of what we used to do is relevant anymore. So I spent 20 years in international development working with multilaterals, for example, and trying to operationalize data ecosystems, the idea that we could create open innovation on the basis of connecting EHRs and sort of supporting decision making in healthcare. And then, you know, suddenly LLMs came along, and now we're faced with this new situation where we are ready to start conversing with artificial intelligence to solve our key problems. And I think that, I mean, we as a company, we're building an accelerator, an incubator for AI in public health, for example. So we expect to see, and this is just one of the initiatives out there. There's so many different initiatives supporting that and many different aspects of healthcare. So when I think that by far the biggest mistake and the largest opportunity right now, and it may sound like I'm sort of, you know, working for the EU AI office, but I think that they have the most operationalizable approach to AI safeguards. What they're saying effectively is, what we're saying effectively is, to governments that and the industry and anyone who wants to, you know, implement those guardrails, try to imagine the systems that are systemic risk. So try to imagine where capabilities exist, the current thresholds. And then once you do that, single out the properties that make them a risk, a systemic risk, and then create thresholds for those. So that code of practice essentially introduces the threshold-based idea for capabilities, and it gives you an ability to start measuring risk, creating risk profiles in a cause-effect relationship, and creating governance structures and audit structures, whether you're a government or you're a company, on the basis of that. If they are complemented by a proper data governance structure in place, so we have the mechanisms with which we can resort to different data to address different parts of the thresholds. So if we fail a specific threshold that has to do, for example, with a particular male or female population in a certain locality, then we should be able to, within seconds, find the data that will fill that threshold gap, that will address that risk profile that I have identified. So we are building mechanisms. We are slowly getting there. But I think the point I'm trying to make here, and what I am supporting, is that we really need to distinguish between AI systems and products and models. And these are two fundamentally different parts of the industry. So we have those who develop LLMs, because at the end of the day, they are going to be the ones that support the agentic AI as well, at different levels. And then we have the people who build on the LLMs and fine-tune them or distill them and create new models out of those. And we have a teacher and student and start accelerating vastly the process. And this is it's the model. Essentially, what I'm saying is that we need to focus more on the models, the LLMs, and try to control those, and make sure that the models don't get to the market, that products are not built with those models. So it's about having, proper materials that we have control over the quality of our foods. The agriculture, the farming, the meat that we consume, and try to make an analogy with AI in terms of how AI develops in our ecosystem. Because from now on, this is going to be very important.
Thank you so much, Dimitris. I want to conclude this conversation with an opportunity for each of you to share with our listeners a call to action if you'd like them, after listening to this interview, to go out and do one thing. What would that be? And Chenille, I'll put you on the spot to go first.
Yeah, that sounds good. And ultimately, there's a couple of kind of key takeaways, and one of them is an action. So a lot of our conversation is around whether it's agentic AI or AI, it's truly changing the game. So right now, these systems aren't just suggesting, they're acting. And the more they outperform us in certain tasks, the harder it will be to keep humans in the loop, which is a point that I was making earlier, right? And that's going to challenge some of our deepest assumptions about human and clinical responsibility. But the reality is also that AI can scale care, which I think is a great thing, but it can also scale harm. So if we want a future where AI enhances trust instead of eroding it, we really need to be bold in how we govern, build, and question the systems we create, which is going to be a key action for how we actually start moving on this. Because at the end of the day, it's not just about what AI can do, it's about what we're willing to let it do and on whose behalf. And that's the patients and the citizens that we're serving at the end of the day. So I'll leave it with that.
Thank you, Chenille. Dimitris?
Well, I have two answers. I'm just, I'm thinking that I can make a joke out of this and say that we can start building resorts, summer camps for AI systems, so they can go and rest and be happy, so that they can produce better results for us and avoid exhaustion and burnout for those AI systems. But then if I start making it more serious, I think for me, it's this, the answer is, I've dedicated my life to this, and I will continue doing so with regard to AI systems. We need to build multilingual and culturally aware patient engagement, community participation in developing those systems and adopting them is of paramount importance. It solves every single aspect, I think, of building safe and productive agentic AI systems, because we can't think about agentic AI if patients, if communities don't have agency. I think that's my answer. Yeah.
That's excellent. Thank you so much, Demetris. Another podcast potential episode right there. I want to thank you both for being on the podcast today. I want to thank the journal, Telehealth and Medicine Today, Partners in Digital Health, and our publisher, Tori Sinaj. Demetris, Chenille, thank you so much for your time, for sharing your expertise with our listeners, and look forward to hearing more from you on LinkedIn and wherever you publish.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you tuning in to the Telehealth and Medicine Today podcast series. Do you want to learn more or have a comment? Do you have a novel topic or solution to share with our audience? If so, send an email to info@partnersindigitalhealth.com or visit the open access peer-reviewed journal Telehealth and Medicine Today and stay up to date with exciting articles that bridge research with real-world frontline impact. Thanks for listening.